We had asked the department to come and see us to have a discussion around matters related to parole. And we have Mr. Mobise, who is the CDC Corrections. We have Ms. Kunene, who is Social Reintegration. And then we have Mbambo, who's always with us, as the Intergovernmental Relations. From our side, we have apologies from Mbaliso and Abram. They are in Agriculture Portfolio Committee. Makagula is in Social Development. And Mr. Ndlovu is busy with matters relating to sex. But we're going to continue with our business. We have just one agenda item, and that is to deal with parole. And we are hoping that the department is okay enough to be able to take us through this matter, which for us is a very important matter. Just by way of context, Mr. Modise, we continue to receive numerous written and oral submissions around the dispensing of parole, if that's the correct word. The written submissions get forwarded to yourselves. Oral submissions, I believe that at some point we had agreed as the Portfolio Committee together with yourselves that you were going to, after our experiences in the Eastern Cape, Mthatha and St. Albert, that you were going to educate inmates by way of a pamphlet, booklet, so that the questions that they raise with us when we go into oversight could be clarified. So that is the one reason why this informed us. Over and above that, you would be aware that this committee, towards the end of last year, became aware of the Waterkloof incident, where four people are arrested for the same crime, sentenced to the same sentence, and only two subsequent to that get released on parole and the other two not. You recall Mr. Modise also had a fight with you about the matter around Mark Scott Crossley and Machabule. Again, both people charged for throwing somebody into a lion's den. One gets parole, the other one is still languishing in prison, even as we speak. So we'd want you to explain these inconsistencies to us. We'd want you also to explain to us the various, well, not various, I think, and members will speak for themselves through way of questions, I think we fairly understand the parole regimes that relate to 50% and one-third, and to extend the lifers that have have come to the fore of late. But there seems to be a lot of confusion around something called four-fifths. You go to some people and they say, now I'm being told I must serve four-fifths of my sentence before I'm eligible for parole. Then we're told that the four-fifths has been scrapped. So this whole parole regime, as complicated as it is, but we'd want you to explain to us exactly as we speak today, what is the parole regime? One-third, when does it kick in? 50%, when does it kick in? Lifers, when does it, or what is the Van Vieren judgment implication? And if there's any others around parole, because we get these type of questions. So for us, really, it's more of that. We also want to understand from the department your capacity. From the department initially, your capacity to be able to do what you're supposed to do correctly in relation to parole. Cindy and I went to Leeuwkop some time ago, and we found that in Leeuwkop, Advocate Max, I think I did relate this story, that at some point somebody that was in charge of the case management had been promoted from somebody that was working in the kitchen straight to case management. And these are the people that then determine whether an inmate is eligible for parole. So the whole capacity of the case management department, we just want to understand that. And the final point that we'd want to understand is your view on the qualifications of the parole board. Now, really, we've been discussing the vacancies and so on. I really don't think we want to discuss it, because you've got that in your document. How many parole boards, whether they have offices and so on. But really, the qualifications of your parole board itself. These individuals that sit on the parole board, who are they? How qualified are they in terms of dispensing their responsibilities? That's what we want to discuss. And when I was going through your presentation, for me, and members will speak for themselves, for me what is important is the challenges more than anything else. Because the other stuff we've looked at, you list as your challenges 2 times 12 hour shift pattern. I'm not sure how is that challenging in terms of parole. Other tasks that do not relate to CMC work, you talk about vacancies as your challenge. You talk about inconsistent decision making as your challenge. And you talk about victim participation as your challenge. For me, those are the important things. Why are those your challenges, and how are we going to fix them up? I want to preempt that I know this morning you indicated, not you, but certainly Correctional Services indicated that there's an investigation of 2 members of the parole board and 3 officials around the Waterkloof matter. So we don't want to get into the detail, because you'd probably tell us it's sub judice, but we'd want to understand what are they being investigated for, without necessarily giving us the detail. You can at least share with us that the 4 people that are being, or the 5 people that are being investigated, as per the SAFM announcement this morning, are for these charges. If you don't want to get into detail. But we want to understand around that water code for, and as I say, if somebody can give us an update on the Scott Crodley Matebule matter. So that you can dispel the notion that people that are well-resourced or well-connected get paroled easier than people that are not well-resourced or not well-connected. That's the perception that I sit with now. Members might have other perceptions, but it is indeed true that if you've got resources or connections, then you can take advantage of the parole, and other people are not I'd like you to spell that. Those were by way of comment, Mr. Modise and your team. There is a presentation. Members will inform me whether we want to go through the entire presentation and ask questions, or if we deal with specifics, because in reading it, many of these things for me is repetition. But if members want the whole presentation, maybe we should start by saying, how long do you anticipate the presentation to be, Mr. Modise, from your side, if we allowed you to do it?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. I think the presentation that we have sent you is one that I can go through in a very short space of time, and maybe concentrate largely on the issues that you have raised, but also talking to the challenges that we have listed on the presentation. So if I'm allowed, I think I can be done with it around 25 past, which is 15 minutes from now.
I seem to get an indication that members say it's fine. All right. Continue with the presentation. We'll then open it up for general discussion thereafter. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson, thank you. I need to mention at the outset, Chairperson, that our National Commissioner could not be here today. He was busy assisting in DOJCD with an appointment of a CFO, so he sends his apologies. But I'm here, and Mrs. Kunene is here with me, who will give me assistance. I must at the outset state that the Waterkloof 4 matter, Chairperson, that we have concluded the investigation, save for two statements that we need for clarity's sake. We have investigated the functioning as well as the delegations that the parole board of Zona of Water was supposed to have considered before they took that decision. And it is correct that three of the members of the parole board, that is the chairperson, vice chairperson, and secretary, are suspended, as well as two case management committee chairpersons, the one at medium A, the other one at medium B. So those are, it's five officials in total that are suspended as we speak.
The chairperson,
the vice chairperson, and the secretary of the parole board of Zona of Water are suspended. And the chairperson of the case management committee of medium A at Zona of Water and the chairperson of the case management committee at medium B are also suspended, which gives us a total of five officials that are suspended as we speak. Lastly, it was around the delegations that they clearly have overstepped, also negligence with regard to the application of the section applicable in the case of the two. But what was also for us a serious worry, Chairperson, was when the consideration was done, whatever result it would have had, the other two must have also been considered. It doesn't matter whether they would have been released or not. But the other two who are in Pretoria Central Correctional Center have not been considered. And according to our policies and our procedure manuals, that was not correctly done. When people are found guilty together on one particular crime and sentenced to the same offense, sentence, when consideration is done to the other must also be considered, and that endorsement must be made in the consideration document to whichever office that is referred to the court, to the chairperson of the parole board. We must make an endorsement in that regard, and that has not been done in this case. So I would just like to mention that. Chairperson, let me take the committee through the presentation, which is a very short one, talks to the purpose, that is to provide status report on capacity and operation of the case management committee, which committees have been mandated through Correctional Services Act of 1998, the Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1977, but also in particular the White Paper on Corrections. On slide 5, Chairperson, we're trying to indicate what roles the two units are playing. When an offender is admitted to a correctional facility, an assessment and classification has to be done within 21 days in terms of the White Paper on Correctional Services. That classification will then enable the committee that is considering the assessment to profile that offender that would then assist us in compiling a comprehensive correctional sentence plan that must talk to the education level of the offender, his state of health, and also the intervention programs that are earmarked to change the behavior of that offender. Now, once that has been done by our case officer, then the case management committee of that institution where the offender is approves this correctional sentence plan. And in approving that, the case management committee also indicates where this offender is expected to be incarcerated then. It might say this offender must be transferred to Kokstad, it might say he must go to CMAX, or he must go to a particular institution. That is based on the assessment and classification that was done by the case management committee. And continuously during the incarceration of this offender, in a period of 6 to 12 months, then a case review team, which is a subcomponent of the case management committee, must also then review the sentence plan of the offender. Is this the right sentence plan? Why don't we ensure that it goes through the following program? So that review is being done as the offender is serving his sentence. And then, Chairperson, importantly, which I want to emphasize, as the offender now nears his consideration date, the case management committee, which is a committee that is comprised of officials of correctional services only, is the one that starts the recommendations. It can be recommendation for parole, it can be recommendation for correctional supervision, it can also be recommendation for a further profile. So all offenders, after they have done the mandatory sentence, are then subjected to that assessment by the case management committee. Now, the case management committee, after they have made the recommendation, then refer the offender to the parole board for approval or disapproval. And I think this is where the chairperson and the committee wanted to have clarity on who does that initial work of recommending. It is case management committee that is located in each and every correctional center. Now, that case management committee chairperson will refer all cases, and after a decision has been taken, also inform the offender. It forms the core of your correctional facility. Complaints of offenders, when they arise, they must be attended by the case management committee. Case management committee must also address offenders regularly about their privileges, about their rights, the do's and the don'ts of each and every correctional facility. And that is where, Chairperson, I think most of our problems arises. The effectiveness of a case management committee. Where your case management committee is not doing what is expected of it, you then have a number of offenders complaining and offenders sending all over the world their complaints because nobody is attending to their complaints. Now, that is where now, after their recommendation, it then goes to the parole board, which approves or disapproves. In the case of offenders serving less than 24 months, or 24 months and less, those offenders are then referred to the head of the center for his approval to say, you are going to be on parole for such a period under the following conditions. And in sentences of 24 months and above, then the offender matter is referred to the case, to the Correctional Supervision and Parole Board, will then take the correct decision. Also importantly, cases that must go to court for review in terms of Section 276 of the Act that talks to correctional supervision, the case management committee chairperson is the one that starts that process and then escalates it to the parole board. In other words, there is no case at the parole board that can be considered without the case management committee having recommended that. That is very important to know. Like, for instance, in the case of the Waterkloof 2, once after the consideration by the case management committee, they came to a conclusion that these people have not served the mandatory part of their sentence. In terms of procedure, that application must have stopped there. It didn't stop in this case. It went further to the parole board, who took it upon themselves to refer this matter to court. Our policy and the standard operating procedures are very clear. In the event that the case management committee finds an offender not to be suitable for conversion of sentence, the matter stops there, and then the offender is informed because he has not done the part that he was supposed to have done. So I just wanted to make that clarity. If, Chairperson, it is a request by any person, external person, it is then that the case management committee will then take that decision, this person is not suitable, inform that particular person or that instance that this person is not suitable. I think that once we have done that, I think it will be helpful as we go forward with the presentation. The following slides talk to the capacity in terms of warm bodies operating in our case management committees, which gives us a total of 892 officials who must work in the case management committees. What we have done, which we are waiting now final approval by the minister to approve the structure, Chairperson, is the composition of the case management committee. We found that case management committees are unable to do all their work, and as such, we need to then, within the structure of correctional services, put up additional positions so that case management committees can do their work. We had one case management committee in charge of 960 offenders. We have found that they are unable to do all of that work. So we have halved the number of offenders. And now what we're looking at is in a facility which has 960 offenders, we should be able to have two case management committees. So that is the latest on that one. Parole boards, Chairperson, 53 parole boards in the country, and all of these parole boards have chairpersons that are serving on contract basis, a vice chairperson also, and a secretary. The secretary, official of correctional services, chairperson and vice chairperson, members of the committee, and an additional two members of the committee community who must serve also on contract basis in the parole board. The following slides indicate how filled are the positions and the operations of the case management, correctional supervision and parole board. I'm sorry, Chairperson. When the CSPB chairpersons and vice chairpersons were appointed, the department undertook a training program. Firstly, we had a national week where we sat with all parole board chairpersons and vice chairpersons, secretaries, chairpersons of case management committees, where we orientated them and provided training. After that, I sent a team from the national office to go to each and every region. Additional to that week, to also again go there and train these people in practical terms, consider an offender, indicate to them what needs to be looked into, and then at the end of that week, then they also had to write an exam. All chairpersons, vice chairpersons, and secretaries have undergone that training that we have provided. I think the other slides indicate what were the issues that were discussed during that training, and also the classroom tuition that was provided on slide 13. And which mandates we're looking at, which are very much important. But what I think, Chairperson, is which I think I ought to have provided to the committee, was with regard to the various sections in the Criminal Procedure Act, especially those that deal with conversion of sentence, together with the Correctional Services Act and the Correctional Services Procedure Manual with regard to conversion of sentence. It is very clear which categories of offenders are expected to be considered for correctional supervision and which categories of offenders are not considered for correctional supervision. And in the case of the Waterkloof, which I find the chairperson necessary to mention is the fact that having been convicted of murder, that first criteria, those two offenders should not have been considered for correctional supervision, because our procedure manual on consideration and criteria is very clear. Those that are sentenced as a result of them having committed aggressive crimes are not candidates for conversion of sentence. So that is, I think, I do have it in my laptop, which I'll provide to the Secretariat to provide to yourselves. Chairperson, coming to the issues that you are raising, which we had informed yourself that we will put in place, we do have a booklet that we are also planning to put on an advert, but to provide to all correctional facilities a booklet that talks to what is parole, how do you become eligible for parole, what is correctional supervision, and when do you become eligible for consideration of correctional supervision. So we do have that booklet. I'm just hoping that the team brought it as well so that we can provide it to yourself. As you go about visiting correctional facilities, you can then even refer to that. Chairperson, also, the status on the Waterloo 4, I think I've addressed that. The matter around Mark Scott Crossley and Matebula, that one, Mrs. Kunene, will get us the latest on it. The parole regime, we are in a sort of a fixed chairperson, in that we do have different interpretations of the various acts. In terms of the old act, chairperson, which you are very much familiar with, offenders could become eligible after they have served a set of their sentence, depending on the crime that they have committed. But that act, chairperson, also had penalization factors, which it was only in 2011 that the National Commissioner decided that all penalization factors must no longer be applied. Now, penalization is when a person has committed one crime more than twice, you then penalize that offender. If that offender's behavior in correctional facilities is such that he committed further crimes, you also penalize the offender. If the crime was committed in group context, you penalize the offender. Now, the argument that we had put forward to the National Commissioner was, when a magistrate or a court decides to sentence a person, all of those factors are taken into consideration. In other words, now, we were actually in correctional services penalizing offenders twice. So we then decided that National Commissioner Moyane to then issue a circular that was saying all penalization factors must then be done away. In other words, all the offenders that were sentenced in terms of the old act must be considered after they have completed a set of sentences. And in the event that an offender's consideration becomes negative at the end, we must give reasons. Why did we come to a conclusion that offender X, you won't be going on parole because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In the absence of those, then there's no reason for us to keep a person any longer in our correctional facility. We then, chairperson, came with the new act, which was talking to half of sentence. In other words, after an offender has served half of his sentence, that offender must be considered for parole or whatever the case might be, correctional supervision. In the event that there are no matters against that offender, then that offender must be released. What we have found out is that it does not happen consistently throughout the country. You'll find a chairperson at Portsmouth, for instance, deciding that this person has served half of sentence, this person can go. But just next to Portsmouth at Drakenstein, you find that this chairperson then decides that this person must serve half of sentence plus an additional 6 months, which we're trying to sort out as a department to say, but why do we have all of these anomalies that are persistent in our correctional facilities? So, legally speaking, chairperson, it's a set and a half of sentence, unless the court has decided otherwise. There are cases where the court would say, you must serve at least half of your sentence before consideration. You must serve 4/5 of your sentence before consideration can be done. In that case, we cannot change that. As a department, ours is to execute what is written in the warrant of a offender. and there's no way that we can change that unless the case management committee and the correctional supervision and parole board are in agreement that this case needs a review. Then they can, we can then refer that offender back to court. With regard to LIFAS chairperson, again, LIFAS very problematic, but I think the best explanation is that in the past, LIFAS were expected to have done 20 years. After 20 years, then we consider them for parole. And that parole, it means they will be on parole for the rest of their lives. Life would still be life in terms of the decision of the court. Now, with the promulgation of Act 111 of 1998, we then started to consider life as 25 years. In other words, an offender must do minimum 25 years. We do, however, have two important court rulings of the Constitutional Court. The Constitutional Court ruled in the cases of Van Vieren and Van Wyk. In the Van Vieren matter, Chairperson, the court ruled that these offenders who have served their time must be considered in terms of the old act. And that is what we have done. We do have all of the information in terms of that. But in terms of the Van Wyk, Chairperson and members who have been a part of the committee for some time would remember that at some stage we talked about offenders earning credits. In the past, offender, if you have served 6 months, we give you so many credits. 12 months, so many credits. That we discarded that system because it was also very much flawed. Correctional centers were giving credits inconsistently. That's why it cost us a lot of problems. We were taken from time to time to court to come and explain. Why did you give 10 credits, for instance, to offender X, and then to offender Y, you give only 5 credits? It was a system that cost us a number of problems, which we discarded, and then opted now for this consideration system based on an offender having served the part that he was supposed to serve. Now, in terms of LIFAS, LIFAS were not given credits. So Van Wyk and others took us to court, which then the Constitutional Court decided they must also be given credits. That's why we then had to do that exercise of giving them credits across the board so that we can attend to this matter, that the minister had to consider these offenders whether they are correct to be released or not. Both those two processes have now been completed. And I think going forward, we can say we don't have any backlogs as to any other system that was applied by correctional services. Chairperson, maybe to conclude, would be for me to explain whether capacity is there. And I think, Chairperson, taking your example, which is very practical, we take an official who was working in the kitchen, all of a sudden now we say this person must be involved in the consideration and assessment of offenders in the case management committee. That is the challenge that we have as a department. Yes, we have made a number of appointments. We have appointed men, we have appointed women, we have appointed white people, colored people, African people to serve in our correctional, in our case management committees. It is not all case management committees, Chairperson, that are doing exactly what we want to do, as I have explained. There are these case management committees, chairpersons whose quality of work leaves much to be desired, and which we think that with continuous training, we might be able to root out and ensure that all members of the case management committees are empowered. For instance, Chairperson, because I know that the committee has gone from centers to centers to go and have a look, sentence plan. You find that at Center A, for instance, this offender has a complete sentence plan which talks to his assessment, to his risk, to the programs that we want this offender to go through. Then you go to Center B or Center X. Then you find you only have the cover that says correctional sentence plan. Inside of the cover, there's absolutely nothing. Now, that indicates to us that the capacity of our case management committees is not up to standard, that we must admit, and we are doing everything in our power to ensure that it is standardized. Now, what are the qualifications? A person that must serve in the case management committee. Minimum requirement must have a diploma, RVQ 13, or a 3-year degree diploma. On top of that, that person must have applicable experience in the field of corrections. Importantly as well, Chairperson, that person should be able to relate to other people, to be able to interact with other people. In other words, interpersonal skills are very much important in this kind of way. Now, we do have people that have the minimum qualification, which is diploma, degree, 3-year degree or diploma. But then when you look in the other competencies, interpersonal skills, managerial ability, that's when we have a challenge, which as a department we are trying to look into, and after having developed the training manual for case management committees that would address all of those competencies that are crucial for case management committee to be very much effective. Also, the other challenge which was there was with regard to the numbers, because our facilities are overcrowded, and as a result of that, you'll find that our people are struggling to cope with the numbers. The offenders that must have seen the case management committee who have not appeared in front of the case management committee. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is we do have this backlog as a result of capacity. But importantly, as we have listed the Chairperson, is this challenge of correctional services of the 2x12-hour shift. We have, though, taken a decision that case management committee, management of a correctional center, which is the head of the center and his lieutenant, must work Monday to Friday. During those days that offenders are open, we need to have a case management committee. We're trying to say we have taken now out of the 2x12 case management committees. We're doing it region by region. We have started in Free State, Northern Cape. We have started in LMN. We're now moving to the other regions. After we have had a session with the management of that region, case management committees, heads of centers, to say it is important that case management committee members not work 2x12-hour shifts, precisely to deal with the backlog that we have, but also to ensure that offenders, as they go through their sentences, are truly rehabilitated, are getting the opportunity to also develop their skills. Chairperson, lastly, which you raised with me, it was the Mark Scott Crossley matter in Matebula and the Zone of Water. We wouldn't like to talk much about Zone of Water. I think what we should do, Mrs. Kunene, is to provide the Chairperson with the findings of this case and also the decisions that we have taken, just to give you an opportunity to be able to look at the things that we expected the Parole Board of Zone of Water to have done and what the Parole Board of Zone of Water has not done. I think, Chairperson, that shall be all at this point in time for myself, unless my colleagues want to add.
Can you bring us up to date with the Mark Scott Crossley matter? When I say up to date, what we know, as I was indicating earlier on, two people, one is out, he's white. Other one is still inside. What is happening there? Is that the end of the story? Is it going to remain like that? The second issue is, you indicated, Mr. Morise, that five people were suspended. You've given us their titles. I would want to know their names. Who are these five people? What is the name of the chairperson? What's the name of the deputy chair? What's the name of the secretary and the two officials? If you can just give us that, and then we will open it up for questions. I think that will then round up everything that we need to know. Just give us the Scott Crossley matter, and then the specific names of those five people on the water clock floor.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'd like to give the update on the case of the of Mathebula, who was the co-accused in the case of Mark Crossley. That I think we all know that the consideration processes, you know, as we have actually looked into that as a department, that the consideration processes when Mark Crossley was considered for you know, for parole placement or for review of the sentence, his co-accused Simon Mathebula was not actually considered, and that was not correct because the process is very clear, as Mr. Misa has indicated, that once there is an accomplice in the same case, then those accomplices must be considered. But in the case of Simon Mathebula, that was not done, and I think the chairperson has actually alluded to this, as you know, looking into those have means, resources, and as the department, we just want to deal with the whole matter by actually allowing Simon Mathebula to also have, you know, the legal representation or, you know, access to the justice. And currently, the responsible region is actually looking into that. That is the update that I would like to give with regards to Simon Mathebula.
Chairperson, I do have the names of the parole board members. The chairperson is Advocate Theron, HWIE's initials. Then the vice chairperson is Mr. Setsedi, JR. The secretary is Ms. Mutubatse, MR. Mutubatse, Mutubatse. Mutubatse. The CMC chairperson, Mr. Dupri D, is the head of Medium A, Case Management Committee. And Mr. Mdaka, M-D-A-K-A, J-H, he's the head of the community, the Case Management Committee of Medium B. Those are the names, chairperson.
Thank you, sir. Let me ask members to comment. I've got a few questions, but I'll reserve mine for later. Let's take Mr. Self, followed by Mem Gwenya, and then Advocate Max. Mr. Self.
Thank you very much indeed, Chairperson, and thanks for the briefing on this matter. Can I ask, it would seem to me that the situation is somewhat more complicated than simply the one-third, one-half calculation, because there are a series of court judgments that have also intruded on this matter. And in specific, there is the case of S versus Werter, 2006, in the Supreme Court of Appeal. There was also the case of Mr. David Price, who took his failure to be granted parole on review. I think that also went all the way to the Supreme Court of Appeal. Now, what is not clear to me is what is defined as the date of release, because that seems to be the key question that was at issue in the Waterkloof 2. What is the date of release? Does it refer to the end of the sentence, or does it refer to the date of possible release on parole or correctional supervision? And I'd just like to know that to the extent that there may be legal uncertainty that arises from these court cases that have been heard by the Supreme Court of Appeal, is it not necessary for us to revisit the relevant sections of either the Criminal Procedure Act or the Correctional Services Act to place this matter beyond dispute in statute? so that the matter can then be settled for all time, and therefore you would avoid all the sort of uncertainties and ambiguities that are a feature of this particular matter. Secondly, regarding the inconsistencies about decisions of the parole boards themselves, you referred to decisions taken by Poldsmoor as opposed to decisions taken by Drakenstein. Is it not a good idea to involve the parole appeal board into this process? And in that respect, you've spoken about the parole boards themselves, but you didn't speak about the parole appeal board and how well that's operating, because it would seem to me that if there are inconsistencies, one should ideally take these inconsistencies to the appeal board to allow the appeal board to start setting down definite parameters that can be followed then by all parole boards simultaneously. Thirdly, it has been my experience that when I go and interact with inmates, very often the allegation is made that they are told by the case management committee that in order to get parole, they need to undertake various rehabilitative programs and or that they need to get in touch with the victims and have a victim participation and reconciliation session. But very often the victims can't be found. Very often there's nobody in the centre who can give the specific rehabilitative programs, and therefore the parole date gets pushed back by virtue not of anything that they have done, but because the department itself is not able either to lay on the victim participation process or the rehabilitative programs that are required. And finally, can I just understand that in flowing from the Van Wyk judgment, my understanding is now that a lifer sentence before 2004 can be considered for parole after 13 years and 4 months. Is that the 20 years that Mr. Madisa referred to earlier, less all possible credits? Is that how the date of the 13 years and 4 months was arrived at? Because I couldn't think of any way in which this magical figure of 13 years and 4 months was actually arrived at as the basis for determining who was qualified for parole and who didn't. Thank you, Chair.
What is it?
Chairperson, thank you. The Honourable Member asked me quite difficult questions. Chairperson, the date of release is when a person has served his sentence in full. In other words, when you are sentenced to a term of 4 years, after 2 years you are given parole, and then after you have served your parole, it is then that you are released finally. So parole is a system of corrections where a person serves his sentence outside a correctional facility whilst he is in the community working or doing whatever he might be doing. The same would then apply to your correctional supervision. So up until that sentence has not expired, that person is saving time. I think that is the way to explain that. Chairperson, I do not know, but the member is very much correct that there are a number of ambiguities in the interpretation of legislation, in particular Act 51 of 1977, the Criminal Procedure Act, in as far as Section 276 is concerned. Now, what we need to do, because that is contained in the interpretation of legislation, is that in the event that we are not clear as to what was the intention of the legislator, it should be for us to go back to the legislator and say, but we would like you to clear this up so as to assist us in having a straightforward way of implementing the act. I would support that maybe that should be looked into. But I think in the case of the Waterkloof 4, the legislator is very clear. The legislator is saying the following qualifies for consideration, which was excluding the 4 because they have committed an aggressive crime. But also what the legislator is saying in terms of when consideration should be done. The legislator is saying that consideration should be done for conversion in the event that this person, the remainder of his sentence to be served is not more than 5 years in future. Now, when you look at the Waterkloof 2 chairperson, you'll find that from 16 December 2011 up to their sentence expiry is more than 5 years. It's more than 5 years. So in this case, when we look specifically to that part of the section, we find that the parole board did not apply its mind correctly. The parole board did not do what is intended in the section 276 of the Criminal Procedure Act, and that is also part of the things that we are raising as a department that needs to be taken into consideration when we start with the disciplinary inquiry of those officials. Chairperson, I'm in agreement with the Member of Parliament that in cases where we find that there are these discrepancies, why not refer to the review board, which in most cases we do. Unfortunately, Chairperson, what happens is we are also from head office side in the same boat as the portfolio committee. When we pick up a matter, the offender either is already released and we pick it up in the newspapers. We don't get reports that would enable us to take decisions before any matter is published or before any offender is released. I'm trying to say, if informed in time, we shall be able to handle these cases appropriately, because that is why we have a review board, which is chaired by a judge, who would also look into matters of legislation. I'm convinced that had we been informed about the Waterkloof 2, we would have referred that to the review board, because at that time two judges were serving in the NCCS, which is also the review board, would have assisted us coming to a correct decision before even the release of those two offenders. So I think the review board, yes, Chairperson, can help us in setting clear parameters as to when and how considerations should be done about these offenders. The Member of Parliament, again, Chairperson, raises this issue that I think I've tried to also cover in my explanation. The case management committee, Chairperson, if it is doing its work properly in accordance with the guidelines and the law and the correctional services procedure, must ensure that after every 6 months they do sit with the offender, establish, are you attending your programs? Why are you not attending programs? And whether there is any movement in that regard. Now, when consideration for parole should be done, it is only then that we realize, but this poor offender has never attended any program. This offender came to this facility being uneducated, and now you want us to release the same kind of person back into society. And that is when the correctional supervision and parole board would say, but this offender must then undergo particular programs so that he is then ready for release. Now, that is as a result of a case management committee that is not competent enough, that is not doing its work properly. And that is what we're trying to root out as a department. Lastly, Friday, when addressing the Gauteng Parole Board, we made mention of the fact that we cannot penalize an offender because the Correctional Services unit that is responsible for classification, for taking an offender through programs, did not do its work. We do have in our community corrections chairperson also a unit there that does the assessment and the profiling of those cases that are in the that are on parole. And in that event, if an offender did not attend all of the programs, that offender can still be released and can be subjected to attending programs at the community corrections office. So that story does not hold any water with us, and which is a very huge excuse from our official chairperson in our correctional centers that this person must still do this and that program. And that cannot be put in front of an offender because it does not hold water. It is not correct. So we were trying to say to parole board chairperson and case management committee chairpersons that there is no way that you can want to keep an offender longer in your facility because it does not attend programs. The responsibility of providing programs is correctional services responsibility, not that of the offender. And it should be time that we take up that responsibility seriously. Chairperson Wonde van Wyk. Van Wyk ruling chairperson was a difficult one in the sense that with the officials that we currently are having in the Department of Correctional Services, maybe only a few were able to explain to us what was the intention and purpose of credits and why were the lifers not included in the first place. So in us addressing that challenge, we then had to come up with a benchmark to say, for all the lifers that were sentenced before that time, we give you this 13 years and 4 months for consideration purposes. The department had to take that decision because this matter was keep on coming, and there was this huge risk that we will again be taken to court by the Van Wyk and others in this matter, because we could not, as a department, explain what was the purpose, why did we do away with it, and why do we now come to 13 years and 4 months. Safe to say that the National Council on Correctional Services also had to give us guidance in this regard, which also they did not find it very, very helpful to come to that decision of 13 years and 4 months. But 13 years and 4 months, chairperson and members, is for consideration purposes. It does not say that this person is going to be released. After that completion of that term of sentence, then the offender is put before the parole board. Parole board and CMC would then be referring to the minister for a decision. Minister in this matter of Van Wyk shall be assisted by the National Council on Correctional Services, different to the Van Vieren, where they had insisted that only minister must deal with those cases. So in this matter, at least chairperson, we are able to deal with the Van Wyk matter better than we would have been able to have dealt with the Van Vieren case.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for that explanation. But when you say the date of release refers to the full sentence, that is quite clearly not what was decided in the Watercliffe 2 case. And so what I'm curious about is if that is the department's understanding about what the date of release is, why was it then that the court in the Watercliffe 2, the regional magistrate in Pretoria, interpreted the date of release as the date on which the person became qualified for parole? Because that's self-evidently how they arrived at their decision to release the people on correctional supervision. The second thing is, I appreciate that the department isn't informed always about what things go down in or that people are recommended. But that begs the question of why the department isn't informed. Why aren't there management systems in place that says before Mr. Scott Crossley is released out of our system, you have to tick this box that says you've got to inform the area commissioner and the area commissioner's got to inform the CDC corrections The CDC corrections got to inform the National Commissioner, and only then can the person be released on parole. I mean, where are those management systems? Because they're fairly simple, I would have thought, to put into place. And they don't seem to be in place.
Chairperson, yes, the Member of Parliament is quite correct with regard to the management system that must inform all the levels going up. Now, somebody has to put the information in the system. If that information is not in the system, you don't find it easily at the national office. So we're working on that to have a dashboard of crucial information that must be provided to myself so as to provide to the National Commissioner on a daily basis on the movement of offenders, how many releases away and how, so that we try to nip this in the bud. But the system is there, and people must put the information in the system for it to be able to generate reports. And in the absence of nobody putting on the information, then you don't get that. I think, Chairperson, importantly, what the Member of Parliament is trying to say is that at grassroots level, at correctional center level, we do have challenges with regard to management and the provision of information that is crucial for us to be able to run this department professionally. So we're dealing with that, and we are constantly sending out teams from head office, from the region, to go to centers to go and establish as to whether the information that is supposed to be provided is provided. We do, however, have some few challenges, and I can assure the board here, I mean the committee, that we are dealing with that. The date of release, Chairperson, I think the committee is not empowered enough to have had access to the heads of arguments of the offenders as provided to the court that took this decision. We do have that information, which was talking to the date of release and mentioning a number of cases which did not hold with us, which we disputed. There is a case that was finalized in the Cape High Court about a release date, which was also quoted incorrectly, because that case actually, Chairperson, explained date of release properly, as we understand it, to say a person on parole, you don't release, you place that person on parole, and then the date of release would be that eventual date when he has served in full the sentence that was expected to have served, taking into consideration also if there were any special remissions of sentences and so on. But date of release, very clear to us in correctional services. What had happened in the Waterkloof, Chairperson, which I think was as a result of the incompetency of the parole board of Zona Water, was the submission from the reps, legal representatives of the offenders, was taken as is and attached to the application to the court up queue. And that formed the basis of the decision. So I think because of the interpretation of date of release by the legal rep of the offenders was taken, because it was, in this matter, it is Advocate Celius S.C. who made that on behalf of the offenders. I think that was taken as part of the motivation to arrive at that decision, which the Department of Correctional Services Chairperson is disputing. And this matter, I can assure the Portfolio Committee and yourself, Chair, that we're taking this matter up. We are in consultation with senior counsel, and I'm sure within a week or two, we'll then submit our heads of argument with regard to the department taking this matter on appeal. So I think, Chairperson, that should be all that I talk on this matter, because it, unfortunately, it's a case that is sub judice, both internally and externally, and we wouldn't like to say quite much on it. Thank you very much.
That's fine. You can respect the sub judice, and we accept that. We don't have to accept that as the portfolio committee. So we want to make a few comments on that thing. You know, if we're understanding you correctly, Mr. Mutise, you are saying that, one, grievous crime should not be a candidate for conversion. That's what I understood you to be saying. And in this case, it's murder. Two, you are saying that where more than one person is involved, all must be consulted. And in this case, that didn't happen. Three, you were saying that the release date doesn't qualify this person, as you understand it as the department. So those are three areas that you are saying are your reasons for suspending the CMC and the parole board, for instance. I have to say that if that is the case, then I really do not think justice has been served in this country. Because when we talk about justice, we talk about fairness and whatever. If that is the case, it is very difficult for me how the courts in South Africa can overlook all those three aspects that I've just referred to, which are very important. Regardless of anything else, you're saying to me that the defense's argument in terms of the release date was what was used and nothing else. I want to put it on record that the release date, the lack of consultation, and the fact that this was murder, and all those things overlooked by the court, really is something that we need to criticize. We have to criticize. And in my view, that judgment has to be taken on appeal, as you are saying you are taking it on appeal. My request to you, Commissioner, is that the people that you employed to do this on your behalf better be capable people, because personally this committee has had difficulty with the capacity of your legal system internally. This matter is so important for us that those that you employed to do this on your behalf cannot come from your legal department as it stands, because we have very little faith in the capacity of your legal department. I thought I just wanted to put that on record for this one, because really we as Parliament are equal to the judiciary, we're equal to the legislature, and therefore we don't have to be subordinate to any of them. We are autonomous, and we should be able to say that we think that this is a case of injustice. I will come to my specific questions on what you've done with these people later on. I just wanted to talk on this matter while it was still fresh. Mam Gwenya?
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thank you for the explanation from Mr. Modise. Chairperson, I'm very worried about the mistake that the department is doing in terms of this act, Ye Parola, 111 of 1998. Chair, it shows that the department is not yet implementing the parole program. Why I'm saying that, Chair, in terms of Umathebula, I want the department to give us a clarity, or maybe it's a question, that how are they going to correct this mistake that they've done in terms of releasing these other inmates and leave Matebula. What is the department going to do? This thing must not happen again, because Chairperson, to me, is totally, totally wrong. Matebula got even right to lodge a complaint, because now it looks like he's sitting in the center. Meanwhile, his sentence is finished. So the department must give us a clear explanation. We can't have people who have been arrested, same sentence, and others, they get out with parole, and the other one left. It doesn't give me any sense, Chairperson. Two, Chair, it shows that when I said there's no implementation in terms of this act. When we go to oversight, Chair, you'll find that there are many inmates that qualify to go to the supervision, but you'll find that they're not yet giving that supervision, because no one take care of that. It's a challenge, Chairperson. Mr. Mdise can say, no, we are trying. Members, they will see we are trying, but it's not there. When you go inside there in the center, it's not there. Somebody is not doing his work. Somebody is not giving the chairperson of the parole board the records of the inmate to say, Winnie now is ready for supervision. Then the chairperson of the parole board then can do their work. You'll find that there's nothing like that. Inmates are waiting for a long time to go to their supervision because somebody's not doing his work. Same apply, Chair, with this one set. If we didn't do the oversight visit, we'll never get that story that there are inmates that were supposed to go to the parole because they qualify for this one set with the act before 1994. We've got these problems when we go to oversight that there are inmates that were supposed to go to parole according to the one that parole. Then if we are saying, Chair, we need to review the act. I don't know what do we mean. I want a clarity on this, because this act is clear. If a person got let's say the person is sentenced 20 years, that person qualified to go to the supervision when it's 13 years, 4 months. And it doesn't mean that he must be released, but he qualifies. That's what the inmate is crying for. That I'm qualifying to go to the supervision, but until now, I'm not yet going to the supervision, because no one is taking care of that. Chairperson, in terms of the members that have been suspended, I don't want to dwell on it too much because we're still waiting for the investigation that how do they go through this and why they were doing it, for what, why they were doing it. Because, Chair, really, that means we're sitting with people who are looking after the criminals and then their criminals themselves. We can't have criminals that's looking at after other criminals, Chairperson. I thank you, Chair. Maybe I'll make my follow-up again. Thank you, Chairperson.
Ms. Kunene, lots of comments there. There weren't any specific questions, but would you want to respond to the comments made by Ms. Ngwenya?
Chairperson, yes. No, I think I made this point. I think the concerns that the Member of Parliament is raising are concerns that we are also having as a department. Clearly, Chairperson, most of the challenges that we have arise as a result of the case management committees that are not functioning in accordance to our own standard operating procedures and policies. So we take a note of that, and we will definitely attend to it. In as far as the one-third and half of sentence is concerned, and also in cases where offenders qualifies in terms of them having served the mandatory term and they're still being in our correctional facilities, what we're doing is to do an audit of all these cases so that as a department we are then in a position to state that, say for those that have committed other crimes in correctional facilities, the following offenders have been released as a result of us cleaning the entire system. I agree fully with the Member of Parliament. Thank you, sir.
Any follow-up, Mongolia? You happy? Advocate Mark?
Chair, thank you. Commissioner, with regard to you mentioned about the qualifications of the requirements for the CMC officials to serve on that. What is the requirements for people to serve on the parole board and their relevant qualifications? Seeing this is a very serious issue, which costs lots of money and deal with freedom of people. My second question is, these five members has been suspended. For what have they been suspended? Is it that they are allegations that they colluded with people to get these people out? Were they corrupt, allegations of corruption, conspiracy? For what? What is the reason for their suspension? And with regard to Matabula and Mark Crossley, it is believed that both of them were convicted for murder. But is it true that Crossley appealed against his conviction sentence, and he was then it is changed to attempted murder, and the sentence was also then reduced. Is that correct? And if it is correct, so the two are not then, for all practical legal purposes, for the same type of crime, although related, for the same type of crime convicted. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the qualifications for members of the parole board is that they also need to have a recognized 3-year degree diploma, also having legal background, and all the competencies that we look for, being able to manage, but also being able to interact with other people, having a knowledge of the Correctional Services Act as a background. The members must also be prominent members from communities where they will have applied for those positions. And I think at the end would be the successful completion of an application form together with having attended an interview in this regard. The reasons for suspending the official chairperson, I think much as I've tried to not talk about the water truth, the fact is that this matter can put us in some sort of trouble, in the sense that we might talk to things that will come or will be discussed during the actual disciplinary inquiry. What I can only say is that gross negligence, was also part of the findings of the investigation that was conducted. With regard to Scott Crossley and Matebula, Chairperson, the Member of Parliament is quite correct that Scott Crossley appealed, and his appeal was successful in the sense that he was no longer convicted of murder, as was the case, but convicted on the charge that the court decided on. With Matebula, that's why in the response that Mrs. Kunene gave was that the case management committee of the institution where he was held has been mandated to find out what is it that can be done to assist him in understanding what his rights are in this matter, so that if he can appeal or if he can take this matter further, he should do that. I think if there's anything better there, it would be Mrs. Kunene who can explain what has been done with Simon Matebula. My understanding is that you are quite right that he's not sentenced in the same manner as Scott Crossley was sentenced, because the crime of Scott Crossley was amended during the appeal process. Thank you.
Mr.
Max,
follow up?
So when the statement was made earlier that this was another case of somebody who's sentenced to the same, or sentenced for the same offence to the same length of time, that's not actually accurate, because they were in effect sentenced for different crimes and therefore for different sentences. So I'm just trying to say that there's no necessary analogy between the Water Creek 4 and the Scott Crossley Matebula case in terms of release or parole.
Yes, Chairperson, the Member of Parliament is quite correct. The Waterkloof, precisely all four, same crime, same sentence. But with regard to the Matebula, Scott Crossley, as a result of the appeal, then his charges fundamentally changed.
Yeah, that may be the case, and I'm agreeing with Mr. Self. My concern and my problem is that the one went on appeal because he had resources. The other one didn't go on appeal because he didn't have resources and is paying the price for it. So this thing of equal access to justice, it doesn't exist. Yeah, so I personally don't want to dilute this thing. It's clearly not equal access to justice to everybody. Because I don't understand, even if Matebula goes and appeals, how does he succeed in converting it to attempted murder? Two people with attempted murder and there's a dead body. It's not going to work. You cannot have two attempted murders and a dead body. It's clear that Matebula is in trouble in this case. Because how do you justify a body and no body charged for murder? So, yeah, I personally, we take your point, but this thing of people with money getting access to justice and being white, it's a problem in my life. And those with no money, invariably being black, spend their lives in jail. It's a problem, and it's something that we must face. It's a reality that's in our courts, and we must be able to talk to this racism. What was that?
Thanks, Chairperson. Honourable Member self-covered me on the question that I had, the one that asked the question of the management system in the correctional centres of ours. Because the question that I have here is that who appoints the chairpersons of the CMCs and who monitors the functioning of the CMCs? Because in your response, Mr. Motiese, it seems as if the head office is not very close to the monitoring of these CMCs. Mm. And how many times do they sit? Do you have the records? And on the presentation slide 8, you talk of, despite some vacancies, all parole boards are functioning, although the vacancies do present challenges in forming a quorum at all times. Now, the question that I would like to pose, if the quorum is not there, how do they function? Thanks, Chair.
Mr. Mazdise.
Thank you, Chairperson. Case Management Committee's Chairperson appointed by the Regional Commissioner and the Deputy Regional Commissioner, as the case may be. Levels 12 and 11, 9 and 10 are done by the Regional Commissioner, and then all levels below that are done by the Deputy Regional Commissioner. They should be monitored by the head of the center as well as the area commissioner where they are functioning. And the case management committee chairperson meet almost every day because they have cases to consider. There are admissions that come on a daily basis. They have to orientate all those offenders. There are cases of misconduct. We find that from time to time fight with one another, case management committee handles that. If you look at the chairperson, the case management committee is actually the core of a correctional facility that looks in the conduct, development, and the rehabilitation of offenders. In the event that your case management committee is not working appropriately, you then have quite a lot of challenges, offenders complaining from time to time, raising issues with the inspecting judge, when members of parliament visit the offenders complaining, consideration of parole dates not being done consistently, and all of those things. That's when your case management committee is clearly dysfunctional. And the research has shown that when we have incompetent people serving in your case management committee, that's what happens when your correctional facility becomes ungovernable. I totally agree with the Member of Parliament, and I also want to state that the systems that are there must inform all of us, all the layers, starting from the head of the center, the area commissioner, the regional commissioner, up to national head office. And it sometimes happens that at the head office we happen to hear very late about things that are happening at our correctional facilities. Some of them through concerned people that inform us that there's this offender that is complaining about this that is happening to him, there's this matter that is happening, and on investigation you find that most of these cases are true. It is true that offender has been subjected to such treatment and so on and so on. So our systems definitely, Chairperson, have to be re-looked at so that we are then able to pick up all of those challenges and problems that arise at our correctional centers.
The other question which was asked by our honorable member was that the issue of the quorum in terms of the correctional supervision and parole boards. We agree that the meeting should actually consist of all members of the parole board, starting from the chairperson, vice chairperson, two members of the community, and two co-opted members of SAPS or Department of Justice. But usually, if all of them are not available, at least three members should form a quorum. So when we're referring to three members that should form a quorum, we're saying three members, of which one must be the vice or the chairperson or the vice chairperson of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted to ask a question from Ubaba Mdise noMama Kunene. Ukuthi, how long are you taking to respond to ama complaints from the inmate? Because if really these questions as buzwa every morning to the inmate, that do we have a tlachte? I think that program was made for that, to assist AmaCMC ngama complaints amabanjwa. So I wanted to know, Chair, how long are they, what time frame do they have to bring the response back? Because they came every morning to say, Tlachte Winnie. Then I said, I want to apply for parole. I'm supposed to be in front of the parole, but I'm not yet. And they must come with a response to me, or to say, 12 o'clock you must go and see the head of the prison for your parole. So I wanted to get from them, but I discussed with Mirana to respond to the inmate when the inmate is putting this complaint. I'm asking this, Chair, because we've got a document of inmate that has been putting their complaints in terms of application for parole and not getting even the response that when are they going to come to the front of the supervision. Thank you.
What is that?
The Chairperson, in every correctional center, we do have a management that must see to the resolvement of all complaints of offenders. Offenders raise complaints, requests on a daily basis, and they have to be attended to on a daily basis. In the event that the head of the center can't resolve that complaint or request of the offender, he must then provide the offender with a commitment to come back to the offender within 7 days. That is how we are expected to function. Now, it does happen that there are cases where the head of the center has to refer that complaint to another official, for instance, social worker, psychologist, and so on. Then in that event, that official whom the complaint is referred to shall indicate when he or she shall be able to resolve it finally. But all of these complaints, Chairperson, must be registered to serve as a source when the eventual resolve of this matter has been done, so that the offender can also attest to that by appending his signature to that complaint. Now, that's when your correctional facility is functioning 100% effectively and efficiently.
Yes.
Now, I don't think that we are at that stage with regard to all of our correctional centers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think all our correctional centers are functioning like that, because in actual fact, Chairperson and members, the resolution of complaints and requests of offenders is the direct responsibility of your head of center. Your head of center is expected on a daily basis to go from cell to cell, establishing as to whether offenders are okay, are happy, there are complaints. He takes those complaints, he notes them in the complaints register, and then attend to them personally. As I've said, there are those complaints that you can resolve on the spot, others you then have to refer. But I can tell you now, Chairperson, we can go now to any of our facilities, even here in the Western Cape. You'll find that going there, we ask them, have you seen the head of the center today? When last did you see the head of the center? And then you get an answer that tells you that I've seen him maybe 2-3 months ago.
Mm.
And this is basic that must be done. If the head of center, daily basis, must go and establish as to whether all the offenders are well looked after. Chairperson, thank you.
Commissioner, let's get back to the Scott Crosby matter. The eligibility for appearing before the parole board is clear. There's no question about it. But the granting of parole is more than just the date. It's about whether this person has gone through the relevant rehabilitation and all those things. That's how you judge everybody else that we see. My question to you is, in the case of Scott Crosley, is it possible for us to get the file so that we can satisfy ourselves that this guy went through the required rehabilitation? Because that's what you ask other people to go through.
Mm-hmm.
They must have a this report, doctor's report. The question is, did you subject Scott Crosley to those things as well? This happened in Barberton, I think. So we need that report in the next 7 days. More than just his eligibility, because that is clear. We're not arguing it. Mm. But was he subjected to all the things that somebody else that I went to, or if I go to in Barberton, would be subjected to on the Scott Crosley matter? And if it hasn't happened, sir, if that hasn't happened, I want to know what are you going to do with the head of that centre as well, because you're sentencing or you're suspending these for gross negligence. What are you going to do to the guy in Barberton? Also, what I need clarity on is you seem to be indicating, Mr. Modise, and we respect it, that you don't want to talk to any of these matters relating to the Zonderwater people because they are suspended, and you early on also indicated that you are going to take this matter on appeal, which means that when you get them in front of the GC, you might have that same problem. That look, I'm not going to be able to discuss this thing because it must go to an appeal somewhere else. Is that a possibility? And if that is a possibility, we don't have the control of when this appeal is going to be heard in our hands. So it means the suspension will be, if it's correct that as long as there's an appeal in the court, they might be saying they don't want to answer questions to you internally. What are the implications of that in terms of the time frame? And the last point just on this one. Depending on that time frame, you're saying the chair, the secretary, and the deputy chair of the parole board in Zonderwater are suspended. In essence, there's no parole board there.
Mm.
What are you guys doing about that? There's no parole board in Zonderwater as we speak now. What about those that are eligible for parole now, or have you put a substitute parole board until this matter is finalized? Because suspension is not only about them, it's affecting the entire system. Have you guys thought about that? Can you just respond on those before I get to my other questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we shall provide the Secretariat with this Scott Crosley file that would indicate what programs he had attended and whether he was eligible. And then also the Waterkloof. Chairperson, yes, the internal disciplinary matter is going to proceed irrespective of whether we have the appeal matter on or not. Why is that? That provision is made in the agreement that we have with Labour, but also in terms of the Labour Relations Act. We can go ahead with that. The Zonderwater Parole Board, yes, Chairperson, they are suspended. We have made arrangements that the Bavianspoort Management Area Parole Board, which is 40 kilometers from Zonderwater, shall take over the functions of the Zonderwater up until this matter has been finalized. And the management of Gauteng is managing and monitoring Zonderwater closely so as to ensure that we will not have any backlog at that facility. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. We've got about 235 CMCs, according to your report. You also, when you were talking to Mr. Self or otherwise Advocate Max, indicated that the qualifications for the CMC is a degree, a diploma, and all those type of things. As we speak now, can we have a sense of how many of the chairs, let's forget everybody else, it's supposed to be the chair, the secretary, and whoever else, just the chairs, how many of the chairs have the prerequisites qualifications as you speak, or are you still doing an audit on that matter? Because these guys are critical. You said yourself that they're the engine of parole or not. How many of them have qualified? And to be more specific, the CMC chair that we found at Leocorp, we could give you the name, is that person still there? Because you yourself indicated that person was not qualified. So generally, of the 235, how many of them have the prerequisites as Mr. Max or self asked, and then what are you doing about it? Because that is critical. And in the Leocorp case, do we still have that same individual or have you replaced that individual?
Do Chairperson, I beg to come back to yourself with the qualifications of the chairpersons of case management committee. I can't say that off the cuff now. I do not have that information, but that can be done nationally, so it will not be a difficult task for us to do. I will provide that to the secretariat within the 5 days, 7 days, I'm sorry. And then the member at LUCOP, who the chairperson is referring to, as to whether he has been taken out of the case management committee or is he still there, I must also beg to come back to yourself on this matter. The decision was taken that he should be employed elsewhere. I will have to just find out about this one. I don't have that.
Chairperson, thanks. I just want to know from the commissioner, with your introduction, you explained that you people had in the past penalty system, which you people actually just did away with. You scrapped that penalty thing because the courts already taken it into account by sentencing the inmates. And then you said even your credit system was discarded because it was inconsistently applied. And then you said then you go strictly to the rule when to release, you know, if the Act say, states a particular amount of years, then you apply it flat out. And that brings consistency. And as the chairperson correctly indicated, because I'm confused now, and we as committee members, we encourage the inmates when we visit to say, participate in these rehabilitation programs because it will count. It's like credit. But you people discarded this process now. Now, with regard to your reply to the chairperson, with regard to this cross-living, and you're going to investigate as to whether he participated in these programs, which make him eligible or contribute positively to his parole. My question is, where do we stand with this process? Is it a compulsory thing? Is it still taken into account for the purposes of parole or not? Because we've got two sets now. The one is participate, it will count for you. You will benefit from it. And on the other hand, you said no, flat according to the law. No parole, credit, no penalty. Thanks.
Chairperson, I think that maybe I need to explain further. What I said is that the penalties that we were effecting on all offenders when consideration time come, the department had taken a decision that those penalties must be done away with based on the fact that those penalties had been considered by the court that was sentencing those offenders. I can confirm that is what I said. And I can also confirm the fact that we have done away with the credit system, which was largely talking about the conduct of the offender while in the correctional facility. But what I have not said was that no consideration shall be done to offenders attending programs as opposed to those that are not attending programs. The department is legally bound to ensure that offenders do attend programs so that their offending behavior can be corrected. There is, just to quote an example, a very important program of pre-release. Before any offender can leave a correctional facility to go and serve his time in the community, either on parole or on correctional supervision, that offender must have done the pre-release program. So whether you qualify or not, you will have to undergo that program. It's compulsory. So there are compulsory programs. Like, for instance, in the case of a person that has been chairperson found guilty of having committed an aggressive crime, there's no way that we can release that particular person unless that person has attended anger management programs. So there are those programs that are mandatory that an offender must undergo. But what I had also said was that this is not going to be taken as a penalty against offenders, because at some stage we don't provide programs to offenders and then we want to say you must stay longer in your facility. There are those programs that an offender can still attend whilst in the community, but there are those that that offender before release must have undergone, and those are the programs that I was referring to. And I think, all Chairperson, we appreciate, and I think because I have done some visits with the Chairperson, appreciate the fact that the committee, including the Chairperson, whenever he addresses offenders, will also emphasize the attendance of programs, which can bring about a change in the offending behavior of an offender. And that is what we appreciate. And we want to inform yourself that we take that very seriously and are appreciative of that. What I was saying also, Chairperson, was that if an offender qualifies in terms of the new act or the implementation of the new act, 111 of 1998, it means an offender must be considered for parole after he or she had completed half of his sentence or her sentence. Now, in the event that the offender had conducted himself or herself badly inside the center, has committed other crimes, that offender shall be considered, and an endorsement shall be made on that consideration to say, because of the fact that you have done the following things in the center while saving time, it is the opinion of the case management committee that we are going to not recommend you for parole. And I think that is what is very much important. Not only to have a community of offenders that is stable, but also the fact that you can't want to commit crime outside and inside our correctional facilities. That we will never allow. And the strict action is then taken against those offenders that are committing such crimes. Thank you, Chair.
Final one from my side, and I think it goes I think it emphasizes the point that Mr. Self made about management systems. You've received, I hope, the spreadsheet that we've given you of a few cases that we'd want you to talk to. If you take Sianda Mapasa at Leocorp, you take Saxon Damini at Leocorp, these people seem to have gone to court. The court has said GCS must do something within a certain number of days. To date, nothing has happened. Now, it's either the department is ignoring the court order, or Mr. Modise, this management system that Mr. Self is talking about is not in place, because Sianda's method gone to court. Court said do this, it hasn't happened, as far as information we have here. The same thing with Saxon Lamini, and there's quite a few of people that have gone to court. Court would have said let him appear or do something, and it just seems to be not happening. You don't have to respond to them now, but we've given you the spreadsheet of at least 7 or 8 people that we'd want responses to, because we need action with them. But the question that I'm asking is, do you have a tracking system of court decisions that you must implement, or would it only apply where there's high profile? Because Saxon, Lamini, Sianda, Mapasa, sure, nobody here knows about them, but the court has said do something and it hasn't happened. But then somebody else who is high profile, we seem to fall over each other to do, because the court has said so. And you've received the information, the court orders, specifically for Mapasa. So do you have a system? Well, what is your approach in terms of managing court decisions where inmates have taken you court for review or whatever the case is? Is there a system in place, or is that something that you guys think needs to be strengthened? Using the example of Mapasa, for instance.
Chairperson, yes, I think we need to strengthen that. We do have serious challenges, not only with regard to offenders, but also with officials. We can cite here examples of cases, some of which we lost without even having had representation when that matter was being considered by the court. I can only say to the portfolio committee and the chairperson that we have now started to have a system in place to manage these cases per region, and that has been then that all these cases are reported to the office of the CDC Corrections. And why we're doing that, chairperson, is precisely to also be informed of decisions that we should have defended the department, but also on cases that are coming to see what is the gravity of these cases and why can't we then appoint senior counsel to assist us in this regard. Which brings me also to what the chairperson had earlier said, that unfortunately our legal services unit not as effective as we would like it to be. I can assure this committee that the Watercliff 2 matter is not delegated to the unit in head office. There's a law firm that has been appointed on recommendation by the NCCS that counsel of this nature be sought to defend the department based on their history. The system that we are expected to have in the national office, chairperson, we're looking at it and trying to find ways how we can strengthen that. If a court of law has decided that an offender should be placed before the parole board, it shall be done that way. The same applies to chairperson, and I need to state this. If an offender, because offenders are offenders, offenders have requests. An offender would normally say, I would like to see the parole board. I would like to see the case management committee. You can't refuse an offender that request. What normally has to be done is that matter should be, that request must be referred to the unit that is there to deal with his complaint. And the offender must then come and raise his issues. That is why we are there. We don't have to be always considering things positively or negatively, but to listen to the offender what his problems are, and sometimes even explain to the offender. I want to set an example of an offender at Modabi, chairperson, who came to the CMC, made a complaint which was not taken seriously, went to the head of the center, they also did not attend to him. That offender called me in the office, in the national office, to say, Mr. Modise, my understanding of my sentence is that I'm doing 16 years. And here they are saying I'm doing 20 years. Because I had gone through a process of appeal. I then instructed the head to go to court. Well, the offender said I was at court X in Johannesburg. We referred the head to the court, and the head did come with the amendment that the sentence has been amended. So sometimes just being humane and listening assists you to resolve quite a lot of problems. Now, that is not what our offenders are getting. There is nobody who listens to them. At the facility, there is nobody who is trying to assist. And it might be a little few where people are not doing that. The majority of heads of centers do listen to offenders and do take their complaints seriously. We want to have this right across correctional services. Because if you don't listen to offenders, chairperson, tomorrow you'll find that your facility is in turmoil, and there's no way that you will be able to manage it properly. And riots, as the honorable member is saying. So this is something that myself and the team in head office, we're trying to put in place to ensure that we do attend to these cases that the courts have decided otherwise. Chairperson would remember that, including the Watercliff 2, we also had a serious situation nearly where our head of center was locked up for contempt of court. And we really had to work around the clock to get that matter resolved. So I can assure the committee and yourself, Chair, that we will also be looking at ways to strengthen the reporting to the national office and the management of that function, because it is crucial that we should be able to have control and at least know what is happening at our correctional facilities. Thank you, sir.
Last round of questions, if there's any, otherwise we'll close. Advocate Max.
Chairperson, I just a concern. We received these complaints from Cindy Abando from the various centres. And I think it's now the third bundle which I got now for this year. But I never get something back as to whether there was these things were attended to. Otherwise, there's no rationale to give this stuff to me if there's no monitoring mechanism to see whether these things were attended to or not. Thanks.
I think, I was just looking at Cindy, I think we took a decision as a committee that we're going to call the department just to deal with outstanding matters. And this will be part of those outstanding matters. We're not going to do anything else except to say, this was given to you, what have you done with it? And I think that's sometime early next term, but we have taken a decision on that matter. Mr. South?
Chairperson, I just want to put a proposition to Mr. Madisa, and I don't ask him to respond to it necessarily unless he wants to. It's about the Waterkloof too, and I think that what went on there is that the parole board waited until just before Christmas, when lots of people were on leave, when lots of things weren't working quite as well as they should work. They then took a decision, which you tell me is an illegal decision, an unprocedural decision, and a decision that was not in line with policy. They then took it to a court, and they took it to a magistrate who retired at the end of the year, so that there was no comeback on the magistrate either. I think that that is a conspiracy of note, and I hope that when you take this matter on appeal, those facts will be presented to the court in the way that they should be presented to the court. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. South. I think you get the sense of what Parliament is saying, because this is not the Portfolio Committee, we're an extension of Parliament. This is what we're saying, certainly around this. Just to correct the issue that Advocate Max raised, my boss here wrapped me around the knuckles. Whilst we're having this meeting where we will discuss all these things, she says that she does give deadlines when she sends you these facts, and please answer those deadlines so it's prepared. So Mr. Max's question is absolutely correct, yeah. So when she sends them with deadlines, we'd expect you to sing it. But we are going to have a face-to-face on that and all other matters sometime in February. Having said that, thanks to the members of the committee, thanks also to yourselves. You understand that parole is a very sensitive matter, and we'll continue to engage on it, because it's the first thing that comes up when we attend our oversight. The first thing that comes up is there parole, is there amnesty? Or we've sent these letters, what is happening? So we're going to ask you to please continue to improve on those matters. And we from our side will also continue to give you feedback from what we pick up in the field around these matters, Mr. Modise and your team. Having said that, I think this is the last interaction we have for this term. Yes? We have another one. No, I'm talking to DC. I'm talking to the department. It's the last we have before Good Friday. When we come back, we wish you well over the festive season. And Cindy is indicating to me that the Portfolio Committee meets on Thursday at 12.
Not tomorrow.
No, tomorrow there's NDC the whole day, or NPC. On Thursday at 12, for a short while, just to do internal matters.
Oh.
Where about Cindy? V226 at 12 on Thursday, and it probably will be done before your lunch is over. Mr. Self, Mr. Max, Babakwele, Mamgwenya, you guys have no apology if we need a quorum, and we'll make sure that other people come, Mamgwenya. Please make other people come. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.